97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Good morning. Good morning. This is Dr. Steve Harvey. This is the Eye on Health Show, 97.1. It's a beautiful day outside, and we've got a wonderful guest. We have Dr. Ed Weisbart, who I'm going to introduce in just a little bit. And we have Carl running the board. Say hi, guys.
Hello,
hi,
everybody.
All right. Hey, we're going to have a good show today. And today we're going to talk about healthcare. We're going to talk about healthcare. And I think one thing that's made the discussion of healthcare so difficult is all the partisan blah, blah, blah that surrounds healthcare, which I think, just in my opinion, has kind of squished any intelligent discussion of healthcare. And most of the discussion ends up being, you know, slogans that people see on Facebook memes or what you see on bumper stickers or whatever. So we are actually going to have a non-stupid discussion of healthcare. Isn't that exciting?
Now you've gone too far.
Now I've got too far, right. Yeah. But I think we can actually pull this off. We're actually going to pull this off. So I think one thing people agree on is I think most people agree that we want everybody to have access to decent healthcare in this country. I think most people agree with that. And I think everybody agrees that whatever healthcare we have, it would be nice if it was good quality and if it cost less. I think that's no controversy there. I don't think I've said anything controversial so far. So we want less expensive health care. We want good health care. And this is just my opinion. Hope no one gets upset by this. But in my opinion, I think that a poor person should be able to see a doctor. That's a little out there. Hope that's okay if I say that. But we want everybody to be able to get access to decent health care. So one specific proposal that's out there is Medicare for All. Medicare for All, again, has been kind of a hot button controversial topic. And I think it's a topic that you don't really hear any intelligent discussion of it from either side. You know, from one side you hear, you know, oh, we all have a right to health care. This is going to cure everything. And from the other side, you hear Venezuela or whatever, you know. So, but we're going to have an actual talk about it. So we have here Dr. Ed Weisbart. Dr. Weisbart, just a quick introduction here. Let me see if I remember, fill in the gaps if I forget all this stuff. So Dr. Weisbart is a family practice physician. Was formerly chief medical officer at Express Scripts. Has had a lot of corporate responsibilities, and among many other things, is now the president of the Missouri chapter of the Physicians for a National Health Plan. So the guest we have here today is somebody who is in favor of Medicare for All, and he's going to explain how come. And I will be here to ask all the tough questions. So. For just to start out with Dr. Weisbart, I know this is a gigantic topic. So can you tell us, can you kind of summarize what is this Medicare for All plan and how would it work if we actually did this?
Sure. Thanks, Steve. And thanks for having me on.
You bet.
So I agree that this sounds like a complicated field, but it's really not. Actually, we're talking about frankly, a pretty simple idea. We're saying take Medicare. And we all know Medicare is imperfect, so take Medicare and improve it in some ways we can talk about. So improve Medicare, and then give that to everybody in the country. Improving it means get rid of the copays, get rid of the deductibles, move away from the premiums. It means add in dentistry, add in eyeglasses, add in hearing aids, so that seniors who have Medicare to today and often don't have any coverage for eyeglasses or hearing aids or dentistry would have included in their Medicare all of those things. So take Medicare, improve it, because it needs to be improved, and then give that to everyone in the country. Turns out it's actually less expensive to do that than it is to keep going down the same road where we're keeping people away from going to the doctor.
Yeah. And of course, we'll be talking about that more after a while. So I guess one feature of this program is it's using something that we already have, and instead of reinventing the wheel or starting something brand new, we'd be just taking what we already have and beefing it up some.
Right. Medicare has been around for more than 50 years. And in those 50 years, although it's imperfect, we've seen that Medicare rescues seniors from poverty. Mm-hmm. We've seen Medicare actually extends the lives of seniors. So most seniors love Medicare, particularly the improved form of Medicare. So most seniors mm-hmm. actually find a way to improve it on their own by adding in a supplement or a wrap or perhaps going to an Advantage plan in some ways. So most seniors have on their own figured out a way to make the improvements. We're saying every senior, and frankly, everyone, needs Medicare with those improvements that seniors have sorted out often on their own.
Yeah. So with this plan, basically, everybody, I guess from birth until death, everyone will have Medicare, but it'll be a different Medicare, an improved version of Medicare.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Paid for by
taxes.
Taxes,
yes. It turns out that we spend more keeping people away from the doctor by having all the barriers
right.
we put in.
Yes.
That consumes 34% of what we spend on healthcare. More than a third of what we spend on healthcare is designed to get in the way of healthcare. So if we did a little bit less of that, we could easily afford to take care of the rest of the country that we exclude from healthcare.
Yes, yes, yeah. And I think as far as, I think one topic that we could pretty much spend all day on is the problems with the system as it currently works. So I guess with this system, with Medicare for All, the private insurance companies that cover people's health care, we're basically making them go away.
We would be, because there wouldn't be a niche for them. The only way to keep a real niche for the private insurance companies is if we make Medicare for All poorly. If we don't cover certain things, if we exclude certain things, if we don't pay for whatever, then there would be a niche for the private insurance industry. So we could create a niche for the private insurance industry by making a bad version of Medicare, but why would we do that? Let's make a good version of Medicare, and then there's no reason that you would need the private insurance industry to confuse us.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of physicians would agree that the private insurance is arguably a large part of the current problem. Boy, I could go on all day about that one.
Well, the problem is that we doctors have to go on and on all day about it. We spend probably roughly half of our time interfacing with the insurance industry one way or another.
True.
Our chart notes are four times as long as other countries. Our progress notes are. We spend almost $100,000 on staff dealing with the private insurance industry.
Right.
Hospitals have incredible numbers of people who just deal with the insurance industry. So, we can go on and on about that.
We can.
That.
Yeah. A couple. And tell me if I remember this right, Dr. Ed. So I think I remember hearing that for hospitals, for example, that typically a hospital will have a staff person who interacts with the insurance industry, that they'll have one of those people for every occupied hospital bed. Is that?
That's actually true. We have 900,000 hospital beds across the United States, 900,000.
Yeah.
And Bureau of Labor Statistics says that we have roughly 900,000 people working in hospitals only in the billing and insurance functions. So some hospitals actually have more than one. Duke University has, I think, 950 hospital beds and 1,600 insurance people.
Wow.
And in Canada, Toronto General has also 950 hospital beds and has 12 people.
12,
so,
right.
So we have a whole industry here that is only designed to hide the cost of the insurance industry. The insurance companies have a 10 to 18% overhead, but that hides the real cost, which is how so many people have these jobs propping up the insurance industry outside of working there.
Yeah, yeah. So if you can imagine, when you're in the hospital, you can kind of imagine there's a full-time billing and collections person. Just imagine them there in the room with you. You have to pay them full-time just to deal with the insurance industry while you're in the hospital.
Right. You can't do that with nurses, right?
Yeah.
Nurses have there's not a one-to-one ratio for nurses or doctors or anybody else. But the average hospital, on average, some more, some fewer, but on average, hospitals in the United States could put someone full-time at the foot of every hospital bed from the billing department.
Wow, wow. And imagine if you could fire that person and have a nurse instead.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't say fire. I would say there's all sorts of other work we need them to do.
Absolutely.
That's actually more productive and contributes to healthcare, and they'd probably enjoy more. So there is work for them, but just not this kind of work. This kind of work is crazy.
It is. All right. Well, that's a lot to think about. So we're going to continue this discussion in just a moment. And we want to thank Dr. Weisbart for being here. And we'll talk more about the Medicare for All proposal, and we'll be back. 97.1, this is the Eye on Health show. We're talking about proposals for healthcare reform, and something that always comes up is I think that's considered a very, very partisan topic these days. Long gone are the times when it's a little bit before my time, but in the 1970s, Richard Nixon tried to get us universal health care, but now it's considered very, very partisan, and it's not really thought of as a bipartisan issue, but I think it should be a bipartisan issue. I think everybody should say we want better health care, we want more affordable health care. But we did get a very good caller who called in during commercial break, and
I spoke to Gary.
Yeah. So Carl spoke to Gary. So speak for Gary. Gary was not able to stay on the line.
Gary couldn't hang on the line. Yeah. So Gary wanted to know, doctors, what you guys have been proposing sounds like it's going to just raise the costs, but not necessarily lower the costs of health care, nor he didn't hear any benefits of Medicare for All.
And that's a good question, because I think a lot of people are going to be wondering that. So Ed, what do you think?
Well, we should do these one at a time. Right, in terms of the cost, there have been now, I believe the number is 30 studies by different economists around the country who have come out and studied this question and have concluded that actually Medicare for All would either cost the same as our current trajectory or save us a lot. So there are really no, in my mind, credible studies that don't agree with that. To me, the economics of the affordability of Medicare for All is as resolved as the science around climate change or around the round earth. We don't have a flat earth, and there are probably some out there who think we do, but the economics around this have been, hundreds of economists have said that we have to do this because we can absolutely afford to, and that what we can't afford is the current trajectory. So in terms of the overall cost from a broad level, you know, we hear people say, well, Medicare for All would cost, let's say, $34 trillion, and that sounds like a lot of money for 10 years until you look at $32 trillion, until you look at the current trajectory, which is more expensive, a bigger number than that. So really there are literally hundreds of economists who have said, yes, we can afford it.
Yeah.
And it's not a mystery why we can afford it. We spend a lot of money advertising on TV. We spend a lot of money doing with call centers and data processing that's designed to get in the way of healthcare. Literally 34% of what we spend on healthcare today is only related to having all these insurance companies.
So a lot of our healthcare dollars go toward advertisements for the health insurance industry, for lawyers to try to find ways to not pay your bills, things
right.
like that.
Right.
Yeah.
So from a broad economic basis, of course we could afford to. From an individual basis, can we afford to do it? Well, most economists have also said that people making up to roughly $400,000 a year, that's more than I make, people making more than $400,000 a year would pay less in the tax increase than they would save from not having to pay a premium or a copay or deductible. So we think of it as, you know, oh my gosh, you're talking about a tax program. Well, yes, of course we are. It's a public program. But people should view their health insurance premium as a tax, too, a hidden tax. The average family now pays more than $20,000 a year on a health insurance premium between them and their employer. Yeah. So we're spending a fortune, and there's no reason we have to spend that much and yet not get what we want.
Yeah, so if the economists are correct about this, then with Medicare for All, we'll overall be paying less. I guess we still hear the argument, oh my gosh, that's going to cost so much. How are we going to afford it? But in some ways, that's sort of like someone saying, you know, oh, I can change your phone bill from $150 a month to $90 a month. And someone says, but I can't afford $90 a month. Don't touch it. Don't touch it. You know,
exactly.
Kind of like that.
That's a really good metaphor.
It's kind of like that. Yeah, I think it's kind of like that.
So yes, we can afford it. And in terms of the quality, we have to understand that today's healthcare system is designed for short-term profits. You know, if you wanted to do a program, I have tried to get insurance companies to do programs to prevent heart disease or to yes. prevent cancer or to do various other things like that. I've tried working within the industry to get programs to prevent heart disease. And the answer I get from inside the industry is, well, how long will that take? And I said, well, probably 5 or 10 years to really kick in and prevent heart attacks. And they said, well, you do know that people change insurance every 18 months in the United States. On
right.
average, people leave their insurance company every 18 months these days.
Yeah.
So if you want to put in a program to improve our health, you want us to spend money, we the insurance companies, to improve the health. Well, we would make a healthier population for our competitors, and we would absorb the cost of that. So the insurance industry today makes it so that long-term investments in our population's health and our community's health are against the rules. It's a bad thing to try to do that.
And our health insurance companies have a responsibility to be profitable. So because they have a responsibility to be profitable, part of being profitable is not taking care of people.
Right. Arguably. Well, I see people I volunteer at a safety net clinic. I go there for free, and I see people typically who don't have insurance. And I saw somebody yesterday who needed to get a test done, and she was 64, and she was struggling to get the test approved by her insurance. She happened to have some insurance. Yeah. Some of my folks do. And they were saying, no, 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 no. And she said she'll wait till she's 65.
Wow.
When she gets Medicare.
Right.
Because traditional Medicare doesn't do that to you. Medicare Advantage does.
Yes.
But traditional Medicare almost never does that to anybody.
So what was going on is the insurance company was dragging their feet to wait for the person to get Medicare.
Yes.
And hoping that, who might or might not live long enough to get Medicare.
And that makes me pretty 65. Angry. Yes. I hate seeing that.
Yes. I think physicians all share that. I'll share that anger. So I was trying to remember what were the other points the caller wanted us to address?
And he was concerned about the quality that there's the cost issue, but what about improving healthcare?
Yeah.
And that's sort of where we were heading with this part of the discussion was we'd finally have a business case to make health better for people. Mm-hmm. You know, if you did something to improve healthcare today and it took 5 or 10 years to pay off, we would all benefit from that. So, but more practically, Medicare for All would cover prescription drugs with no copays.
Mm-hmm.
Pharmacy costs could be negotiated by the federal government, and we could actually get lower cost of prescription drugs. And individuals wouldn't have to trade off paying for their insulin versus paying for their rent. So it would improve that. It would cover everything that was medically necessary. Medicare for All would mean everybody in the country would be able to get eyeglasses if they need them, or hearing aids if they need them, or go to a dentist. It's amazing how many Americans don't go to a dentist because they simply can't afford to.
Yes. Yeah. Something
on the order of a quarter or a third of seniors in some areas don't have any teeth because they've never gotten to a doctor.
Yeah. Matt just called, and we're almost out of time for the segment, but he wanted to know, one of the arguments against this is quality of health care and long wait times. That's what he's concerned about, because that's one of the arguments you hear about this.
Yeah, good questions.
So wait times in Canada are an issue because they pay half of what we pay today, so they do have an issue with that. But wait times in Canada are only for things that aren't urgent. So
like a hip replacement.
Like a hip replacement.
You have to wait 6 months because it's elective.
80% of Canadians wait less than 4 months for elective surgery. 80% of Canadians wait less than 4 months for elective surgery. And we frankly have no idea how long the waiting list is in the United States, because if you call some doctors' offices for an appointment, the first question is, what type of insurance do you have, not what's your name? And so if you have some kinds of insurance, you may have a 1 year waiting to get in to see that doctor, because that's as many of that insurance as they'll take. So we don't know what the waiting list is like here. But what we do know is that when we put in Medicare in 1965, when we put in Medicaid in 1965, when we put in the Affordable Care Act, even in states that expanded Medicaid, when Canada went fully live with their Medicare for All program, when Taiwan went fully live, all around the world and certainly within the United States, we know that the 2 years before and the 2 years after, doctors saw the same number of patients. We just saw a little bit fewer of the not-so-sick, extra wealthy, and more of the sick folks, because we drive that. But then there's also been surveys asking patients in the United States before and after the ACA in states that expanded Medicaid, so how hard was it to see a doctor? And guess what? It was the same. So we know that the waiting time didn't change. We know that physicians were seeing the same number of patients, and we know patients didn't perceive a real change in access to healthcare. So we don't have to worry, but we have the resources. Plus, doctors today spend easily half of our time not seeing patients, and we could change that.
Yeah. And I think most physicians would agree that the harassment we get from Medicare is much smaller than the harassment we get from private insurance companies.
Absolutely.
You know, there's actually, people think of government as being bureaucratic, but in this case, not so much. So we'll be back in just a few moments. Hey, we're back. This is High on Health, 97.1. We're talking about the debate surrounding Medicare for All. And we're having a calm, rational, non-crazy, non-stupid discussion of Medicare for All. And boy, have our phone lines lit up today. A lot. I guess I should have known that was coming. But they've all
had
other
good
things questions.
Planned.
Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah. But they all had good questions, and so Carl, the guy on the soundboard, he got a call from Robert.
Robert's on the line. Robert works for the government, and he believes that government. No, but he says this is a fact. He's like, this is not a talking point. He said this is a fact that government is hampering the progress and bringing healthcare costs up. If it wasn't for government, if there could be cross state lines, insurance, that health prices would go down.
So he said, and I think
government is the reason healthcare is so expensive right now. And if you do Medicare for all, that's just letting the federal government take over healthcare.
Right. So his argument, and I can see what he's saying, that we want less government, not more, and that what the government is currently doing is driving up health care costs. And he says that's because the government doesn't handle
anything well.
Sure. Okay. Fair enough. And also because they're not allowing cross state.
Right. You have to. And there's no free market.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a tough one. But
so
what do you think?
So full disclosure, two things that you should know about me. Uh-huh. First is I'm actually a capitalist. I had a retail business for a decade. I'm a capitalist.
Uh-huh.
So I believe in the free market.
Yeah, me too.
The second thing that you should know about me is I'm a fiercely proud patriot of the United States.
Yeah.
And so when I hear someone say that the government can't ever do anything right, that frankly is offensive to me because I am a fierce believer that the government in the United States is a tremendous place with some problems which we need to address. But to say that our government can't do something right is offensive to me.
Yeah.
Now, within healthcare, you know, I believe that the way we've used the free market in healthcare, which is what Robert's getting to, is that we have frankly allowed industry to take that over in a way that doesn't help us. So today, I'm competing against other doctors for the most lucrative insurance contract, and that wouldn't change if you let insurance companies compete across state lines. That doesn't affect that. I'd still be competing against other doctors to get the most lucrative insurance contract, whereas tomorrow, under Medicare for All, I hope tomorrow, under Medicare for All, what kind of insurance you have wouldn't affect me, and instead I would be competing against other doctors to make you want to come see me.
Yes.
Of course, today if I can find an insurance contract that pays me $5 more per patient, I'm going to have to find the 100 patients for whom I don't get paid that much and get them out of my practice because I'm working retail, and I've got to assess what you're worth economically to me before I let you in my door.
Yeah.
That's not a good use of the market. Interstate insurance offerings doesn't in any way address that. Instead, what you have would be a race to the bottom where insurance companies would do even more games than they do today, and they'd figure out ways to cover even less things than they do, and people wouldn't discover that. They'd buy the cheapest insurance product that they could, and they wouldn't discover how crummy that insurance is until they got sick.
Right.
And then it would be too late, and they'd have bankruptcy issues. So we do know what we want insurance to cover. We do know what a good insurance product would look like. That's what everybody in the country should have. And to make the insurance companies compete, they'd be competing to offer less expensive but lower quality insurance. We should get rid of all that.
Yeah.
And most of what we spend on healthcare is to prop up that competition. That's crazy. Let's spend our money on healthcare, not on insurance.
Yeah. And I guess part of that is, and I think this is a common misunderstanding of Medicare for All. If we did have Medicare for All, for the most part, the doctor who sees you is still a small business owner.
Right.
And the private practice you go to is still a private practice. It's just the payer is all Medicare instead of private insurances. Just like your private doctor now has a lot of Medicare patients already.
Yeah.
Now it'll be every Medicare patient. Every patient could be Medicare. And also, I think what a lot of people don't understand is that, and tell me if this statistic is right, but each physician pays about $100,000 per year just in dealing with the craziness of private insurance companies. I know I also had a medical practice that I built up myself, am every bit a capitalist, and that was part of my expenses, was about $100,000 a year in hiring extra staff and hiring billing and collections, just for that extra blah, blah, blah that goes with the craziness of the private health care plans, and really much, much less so with Medicare.
Wouldn't you rather be spending, having staff that are helping people remember how to take their medications or helping them, you know, deal with their home health concerns? There's so much health care that we don't do in the United States that other countries do that makes the population healthier that we just don't get to because we spend so much money on stuff that's just designed for the corporate practice of medicine. It shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like $100,000 a year per physician just going straight into the fire.
You know? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd rather take that $100,000 and buy a cool car or something like that, you know?
Right.
Or maybe save it up. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, the point, though, is, you know, that $100,000 a year you pay is built into the fee schedules that people have to pay their premiums for.
Right. Right.
So if you have $100,000 a year that doctors don't have to be paid, and I'm not saying that we should cut physician salaries, but I'm saying that's money that we're wasting. And where does that money come from? It comes from insurance premiums. And where does that come from? It comes from the hourly wages that people don't make because their employer has to take what should be their wages and divert them into paying for these crazy expensive premiums.
Yeah, yeah.
So the country would be better off economically than by blowing it up the way we're doing with wasting our money on insurance.
Right. So if the argument is correct, then it'll cost less than what we're currently doing, and we would have coverage for a lot of stuff that we don't currently have coverage for. I think one thing people might be wondering is, and maybe different people have different proposals, but if we did this, who would be covered? Would it be every citizen or everyone who lives here or everyone in our borders? Who would be covered? Who would be not covered?
So there are two bills, one in the House and one in the Senate, and both bills say the same thing, all residents. So not all visitors. You can't run across the border and then spend 2 months in the Mayo Clinic. Not all visitors.
Right.
But everybody who resides here. And that's really important. It's not a citizenship requirement, and it's really important because when I'm on the bus, when I'm in the restaurant, if somebody has tuberculosis and has to decide that they can't go to the doctor because they can't afford the visit, or they have coronavirus and they can't go to the doctor, I'm at risk if you're not healthy. So it's really important that the whole country be included in this. And there's a lot of reasons that makes economic sense. But I think of it more the sense of if your kidneys stop working and you have to go on dialysis or die, as a country, we've decided if you have to go on dialysis or you're going to die, that's a reason that Medicare should pay for that. So Medicare today pays for dialysis.
Yes.
Well, if I'm going to pay $80,000 or $90,000 a year to give you dialysis, I would rather spend a few $100s a year to buy you insulin or to buy you your blood pressure pills and then prevent your need for dialysis by a few years. If you think somebody on dialysis should die if they can't afford dialysis at $80,000, $90,000 a year, well, we just have to disagree. But if you think we should pay for dialysis, well, then just be prudent about it and let's try to prevent the need for dialysis.
Right. Yeah. 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 And I think... And I think that is something people disagree on, but I think most physicians would agree that we don't want people to simply have to die because they don't have enough money.
I saw somebody about a month ago now in one of the places where I volunteer. She's about 55 years old. She has end-stage emphysema, and she came in quite short of breath. She's sitting in the chair quite short of breath. And I don't know if you've ever seen, you probably have, Steve, but somebody who's that short of breath, it's like you've tipped back in your chair and you've tipped back a little bit too far and, oh my God, the chair's about to fall over and you rescue yourself.
Yeah.
She feels like that all the time.
Yeah.
And I said to her, well, where's your oxygen? And she said to me, I can't afford oxygen anymore.
Wow.
So I saw someone, a human being in the United States of America, who literally can't afford to breathe.
Wow.
And that's just, you know, that's not acceptable. That's just not acceptable.
That's just wrong. Yeah. I think I know they've taken polls of physicians, and I think I'm biased on this, but I think physicians should make all these decisions. I think. I exaggerate. But I think physicians are in a good situation to know how things work and how it is that maybe we can make healthcare work better. And I know physicians are also divided on Medicare for All. I think most physicians want some kind of universal healthcare, some way to make sure everybody's covered. And I know, didn't some major physicians organization recently give an official endorsement of Medicare for All, the American College of What was it, the American? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so there's three points. First is that 60% of physicians want Medicare for All. Mm-hmm. 60%. So it's not a minority view. It's actually the majority.
And we're not all hippie liberals.
Yeah, it's not a hippie liberal group.
Right.
The second piece is what you just brought up, which is the American College of Physicians, the ACP. Yeah. This is the organization of all the internal medicine doctors in the country. Mm-hmm. It's one of the largest such groups.
Yeah.
And they just about 2 months ago now, it is, came out and said that, yes, actually, Medicare for All all is one of the two ways we simply have to go forward, and we can't stay the course.
Right.
Medicare for all is one of the two ways we must go forward. So that's a pretty influential, thoughtful group. Then the third piece is the American Medical Association. Mm-hmm. Has long been an opponent of Medicare for all, but due to increasing activism by the medical students around our country, the American Medical Association recently pulled out of one of the PACs that opposes Medicare for All.
Really?
And they were actually almost going to endorse Medicare for All, but that failed on the House of Delegates at the American Medical Association by a vote of 53-47.
Did it really?
Not by a 90-10 vote,
wow.
But the AMA, even the AMA, which is hardly the staunch voice of progressivism, even the AMA is getting closer and closer to this point of view. So we have to do this, and it just makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So 60% of physicians.
Yep.
Yeah, that's something. All right. Interesting. Well, hey, this has been a fascinating discussion. We're going to go out for break for a little while. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some other things. We're going to switch gears. We're going to talk about the coronavirus, because that's what everybody wants to know about. And we're also going to talk about something that does not cure coronavirus. So to find out about coronavirus and something that doesn't cure it, tune in. This is the Eye on Health show. So we're all taking a breather and recovering from our intense discussion of Medicare for All. We still have Dr. Ed Weisbart here with us, and we've got Carl on the board, and we're talking about another topic now. We're going to be talking about the coronavirus outbreak. That's what everybody's getting all excited about, and we're not totally without good reason. Here's a summary of how things have been going recently. As you know, the outbreak is still mostly in China. The vast majority of people who have the virus are in China. It began in the area of Wuhan, which is a city of 11 million people. Right now, outside of China, there's about 4,500 cases of confirmed coronavirus and a total of 67 deaths. The biggest outbreaks outside of China are in that one ship, the Diamond Princess cruise ship. If you thought of that as a country, that would be one of the top countries that have been affected, and also South Korea and Italy, and also an outbreak in Iran as well. I think there's been some controversy regarding how much this thing is going to get passed around and what the fatality rate is. It looks like a fatality rate outside of China looks like it's a little less than 1%, but those are based on some uncertain numbers because we assume there are probably people who are infected that we don't know if they're infected, so it's hard to know if we're counting things correctly. So that less than 1% figure is has some uncertainty to it. Another topic that's come up is get this. So there's silver colloid solutions. There are solutions that have tiny particles of silver in them. Silver colloid solutions or solutions with silver in it do have some legitimate purposes as in bandaging and antibiotic ointments and things like that. Silver colloid solutions do not cure coronavirus, in spite of what some people are starting to claim, and really ingested, like silver colloid solution that you drink or you inject or anything like that, they have zero known value for anything. And in fact, they can occasionally do bad things to you, but they have zero benefit. So one place where this recently came up is that I don't know if you're old enough to remember the televangelist Jim Baker. Jim Baker, the same Jim Baker who went to prison for fraud in the, I think, the early 1990s. Now he's been selling silver colloid solution on his show. He had claimed that it cures HIV, cures all venereal diseases. And now that coronavirus is out, right on cue, he's claiming that it cures coronavirus with no evidence of that. So the Center for Science and the Public Interest has submitted a complaint to the FDA and to the Federal Trade Commission, hoping that they can squash that. And I'm rooting for the Center for Science and the Public Interest, because so long as this is a fraudulent treatment, we're going to have people hurting themselves with the silver colloid solution. wasting their money, sending their money to a fraudster, and also possibly staying away from legitimate treatment. So I say go get them. Go get them. Yeah. So that's the update. I think the whole outbreak of coronavirus also brings up some issues surrounding public health care, where now we have a situation where if there's somebody in the same room with you who's sick, you kind of want them to see a doctor. So we can kind of loop back. Does that kind of loop back to the Medicare for All thing in some way?
Yeah, I know we kind of migrated away with these two things you brought up. But indeed, you know, if somebody's coughing and hacking up stuff and sick, not just because of coronavirus, but certainly even more so now, if anything, we want to know that you can go to the doctor when you want to and not have to think about whether or not that's going to affect your mortgage payment or your rent or your kid's food.
Yeah.
And in terms of the silver collet, if I could go on that for just a second, you know, that's one, I think, pretty crazy example. But there's lots of things out there that are not well proven and are not well studied. And a Medicare for All solution would mean that if you could actually prove that the thing that you've done is an alternative complementary medicine piece, if you can prove that it works, well, that would mean that we would probably want to have the country cover it as a part of insurance for everybody in the country.
Yes.
Today, the insurance companies want to not cover anything that they can get away from. But if you have an effective, proven treatment, there's no better solution to get the whole country able to have it than with Medicare for All.
Yeah, yeah. So if things actually work, then it would be covered.
And right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. So thank you. So hey, we're getting close. We're getting close to the end here. We're gonna be the show is gonna be changing. It's gonna be the same great show, the same great guests, the same time slot, but it's changing its name. So today is going to be the last day that we're calling ourselves Eye on Health. Starting next week, we're going to be the Medical Beat. It'll still be 97.1. It'll still be 10 to 11 a.m. And we're going to have Ed Weisbart back. And it's going to be awesome. And we'll have all sorts of good guests here on the show. So that was good. Hey, so we have a few moments left here. Let's pick on Carl.
Oh, we have 30 seconds left, so let's say goodbye to everyone.
Can I make one pitch? Go to showmemedicareforall.org. Showmemedicareforall.org.
Aha! Show me Medicare for All. What's that? Show me Medicare for All.
Showmemedicareforall.org.
Okay. Hey, good pitch there. Good pitch. Yeah. So we like to bring up controversial topics. I know this counts as controversial. Have a great day.
Get more at 971talk.com.